Chapter 42. Before I died, I went to a lot of movies. Movie theaters were totally useless for me, especially as more and more of them went with increasingly advanced technology for their sound and projection systems. The way I tended to foul up technology, especially electronics, just by standing around meant that it was tough to see a movie all the way through without something going horribly wrong with the sound, the picture, or both. Magic draws a lot of its power from emotion, and at the movies that meant that things would tend to go bad at the parts of a movie that were the most gripping and interesting. So I could see a movie that sucked at a theater, usually, but if I wanted to see a good movie, there was only one solution, a drive-in. There are still a few of them up and running. I went down to the one in Aurora. There, I could be far enough from the projector not to interfere with it. The sound system of the movie consisted of hundreds of little car speakers and car radios, mostly turned up loud. Yeah, the place was full of kids who were basically at the drive-in in order to make out, wander around in giggling groups, sneak friends in for free in their trunks, and drink smuggled alcohol. That never bothered me. I could park up front, sit on the hood of my car with my back leaning against the windshield, my hands behind my head, and enjoy the whole movie all the way through. I usually took Bob along. He sat on the dashboard. I always thought I'd been doing him a favor, although when I thought back, it made me think he'd been doing it for the sake of shared experience, for company. Anyway, the point is, I've seen a lot of movies. So I know whereof I speak when I say that I went through the way my apprentice opened and landed in the first act of a movie. Cold water engulfed the lower half of my body, and a second later a wave slapped me in the middle of the back, nearly throwing me off my feet. After the past days of muted physical stimuli, I staggered and gasped against the sudden shock of pure sensation. Salt spray filled my mouth. I should have expected that. This was the spirit world, where the immaterial wasn't. Gravity, heat, cold, light. They were all just as real as I was now. I was a civilian again. There wouldn't be any fun ghost tricks like vanishing out of the cold water. I spat, regained my balance, and got my bearings. I was maybe 10 yards away from a pebble beach. The light was gray and somehow oppressive. The beach rose a couple of feet from the water across maybe 200 or 300 yards, then ran right up onto the feet of a granite cliff. There were things littering the beach. Imagine a jack from the children's game. Now imagine it had babies with a porcupine the size of a dump truck. That was what lurked there, some kind of massive, lethargic-looking beasts, their bodies mostly dug into the ground. Each projected several enormous blade-like spines 7 or 8 feet long in several directions from its hump of a body, along with hundreds of other spines about a quarter that size. They were scattered in a vaguely ordered pattern all across the beach between us and the cliffs, their sides heaving gently as they breathed. My eyes tracked on the cliffs to squat, ugly, blocky-looking structures at their summit. There were narrow slits carved in their fronts. In a couple of spots along the cliff face, the stone had collapsed into a very steep gradient. A particularly agile monkey might be able to make his way up to the top. All of those spots were covered in razor wire and surrounded by fortified positions that would make an ascension a particularly nerve-wracking form of suicide. A cool wind that smelled of rotten meat fluttered across the pebbles and sand, and it carried a blood-red banner mounted above the structures out to the side, displaying a black swastika within a white circle. I stared at it blankly for half a second, while another wave hit me in the back and threatened my balance. Then it struck me where I'd seen this before, the first act of Saving Private Ryan. "Oh, crap," I breathed. This was the Never-Never, the spirit world, and beings of powerful mind and will could reshape the world to their liking. Evil Bob had been the part of Bob the Skull, which had been in the service of this jerk named Kemmler, who had apparently been killed for good sometime during World War II. Evil Bob had been working with the theme when he designed defenses to his patron's base of operations. There were flashes of light from the firing slits in the bunkers at the top of the cliffs. Bullets that shone faintly scarlet hammered into the beach at the water's edge and then tracked toward us. The hiss splat of impact got to us a second before the chattering thump of the guns.
"Get behind me!"
I shouted to the spook squad. I heard them splashing through the water in immediate obedience. Right. As long as I was a spirit in the spirit world, I might as well take advantage of it. Since I didn't really have my old duster, even though I'd been wearing it ever since Carmichael pulled me up off the tracks, I didn't see any reason why I shouldn't have my shield bracelet either. I focused on my left wrist without actually looking at it, exerted my will, and then shook my arm in the old familiar gesture that would make sure the bracelet was clear of the sleeve of my duster. When I did, I felt its slight familiar weight as it dropped down, a chain, its links made of several braided metals and festooned with dangling charms in the shape of medieval shields. "Huh," I muttered, and began to run my will into it to bring up a shield. A heavy weight hit me and sent me to one side. I hit the cold water and went under. Glowing red energy masquerading as bullets smashed through the water where I'd just been standing. I came up out of the water, sputtering, and saw one of the projectiles slam into a protector ghost who had been behind me. The round impacted as if upon a living body, apart from one detail. There was no blood. Instead, it tore away a section of the spirit's arm and sent a spray of clear ectoplasm splattering out of him. He barely reacted, pausing to glance at his arm, as if puzzled. The next round tore away the largest part of his head, and the spirit simply dissolved into more transparent ectoplasmic jelly that was swallowed by the sea. Sir Stuart's shade helped me get back on my feet as a second stream of projectiles strafed through the spook squad, sending ghosts diving and scrambling for cover that was not there. Several more were hit, gaining savage, bloodless wounds. We lost another spirit, one of the lectors. "Behind me!" I shouted again, and channeled my will through the shield bracelet, spreading it out into a quarter dome of faint blue energy that came to life ahead of me. It attracted fire at once and shed it, sending spalling projectiles hissing through the air as they rebounded. I started forward toward the beach, with Sir Stuart's shade behind me and slightly to one side the whole way, steadying me as the surf kept trying to knock me down. The spook squad began to close in on me, taking shelter behind the shield, and we pressed forward to the beach as fast as I could walk while still holding the shield. It turned into hard work within a few seconds. Even in magic, there are some laws you don't get away from, like the conservation of energy. Those pseudo-bullets were hitting my shield with a certain amount of force. I had to expend a similar amount of energy to stop them. I was cheating by making my shield as rounded as possible, deflecting rather than directly opposing, but even so, it was taking one hell of a lot of my effort and will to keep the fire off us. My shield wasn't a solution, really. I was working too hard to manage the simultaneous counterstrike. Sometime soon, within the hour, I wouldn't be able to keep holding it, and when it went, we were all going to be dead, deader. I had to figure out a way to silence those guns.
"Sir Stuart," I shouted, "do any of the gang carry grenades?"
Sir Stuart's hand and arm came into view from behind me. He was holding, I kid you not, a little black iron bomb about the size of a baseball. There was a hole in it that had been plugged with a cork, and a fuse stuck out of it. The thing was straight out of a cartoon, except for its size. I looked back over my shoulder and saw that several of the doughboys had produced more modern-looking pineapple grenades of their own. A couple of shades dressed in uniforms of the Vietnam era had them, too.
"Neat," I said. "Okay, here's the plan. We head for the base of that bunker right there, and your boys blow it up. Then we get the one next to it. Then we blow the nests on that slope between the two bunkers and get the hell off this beach."
Sir Stuart eyed the ground ahead of me while fire rattled against my shield. He studied it intently for a moment, then nodded. He looked over his shoulder at the rest of the squad, his face devoid of expression. All of them simultaneously nodded back at him.
"That was not even a little creepy," I muttered.
"Okay, stay behind the shield."
and I started pushing forward again, striding across the pebble beach toward the cliff. That was when the shells came in. There was a high-pitched whistle from overhead, and then a flash of motion. I had an instant impression of a skull plummeting at a steep angle and blazing with the same angry scarlet energy as the incoming rounds. It hammered into the beach about 30 yards ahead of us. It didn't make any noise when it exploded. Instead, there was a sudden and absolute silence, as if the skull was drawing in absolutely every motion around it, including that of sound moving through the air. And then there was a flash of light, and an instant later, a roar of wind and fire. My ears screamed with the pain of the shift in air pressure. Pebbles slammed into my shield, sending it to blazing blue brightness as the incoming energy began to overload what the shield could handle, the excess energy being shed as light. When the dust cleared, there was a crater in the ground, as deep as my grave and 20 feet across. More screaming whistles came from overhead, and I felt a surge of raw panic trying to push the thoughts out of my brain. Hell's bells. If one of those skulls hit closer to us or behind us, where my shield couldn't cover, we were dead. Another near miss might blow my shield down entirely, and then the machine guns would have us. There was only one place to go that might be safe from the screaming skulls. "We've got to get closer," I growled. "Come on!" And I broke into a flat-out sprint toward the machine guns.